And joining us on Perspectives today is Heather Lindy. Heather is the author of the book called Find the Good. It's an interesting topic, and we're not going to give it away just yet, but it's something that you might want to think about, and the fact that actually we don't think about it until it's upon us, and then we read these kind of stories, articles all the time, but it's very difficult, I would imagine, to write and even to read sometimes. So, Heather, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Now, I just said the title of your book is Find the Good, and I didn't give the additional information, subtitle, anything else. If you could kind of fill us in a little bit about the topic of the book.
Well, it's actually unexpected life lessons from a small town obituary writer. I write the obituaries for the Chilkat Valley News in Tiny Haines, Alaska. It's a weekly paper, sometimes 8 pages, sometimes 12, sometimes 16, depending on the ads. And every person that dies in our town, it's basically considered news. So they get the New York Times treatment. It's still sort of an obituary format, who they were, what they did, what they died of. But then there's quotes and stories from friends, from families, from coworkers, whatever, that make something of the life of the person. And I've been doing these now since about 1996. In the meantime, I've also contributed to a lot of sort of broader newspapers, things like I was a columnist for Women's Day for a couple of years. I've written for the Christian Science Monitor. My commentary has been on NPR. But my real job is writing obituaries in a small town. And this book is about how doing that has taught me to find the good in people and in situations where, like as you say, it's not always apparent. And it's really hard when you're sitting with a family, somebody who's just died, and just trying to even find the good in that room. But then once you start asking questions and listening, it, I think, can become an inspiring thing, both in the gathering of the information and in the stories that I hear about ordinary people who really lead, in lots of ways, extraordinary lives.
Now, as far as your background, as you mentioned, your real job is writing obituaries in a small town. Tell us a little bit about growing up and your schooling, what you did, and actually when you were younger also, we think about these obituaries, and sometimes, depending on your family, little children aren't allowed to go to funerals or talk about that, and sometimes we tell our little ones, I remember when my grandfather passed away and my little cousin said, "How far is it to Kansas?" And we said, "Why?" He says, "Well, because I figure that if grandpa's going to heaven, he's probably in Kansas by now." And that's because the name Kansas, he associated with the Wizard of Oz and going home and everything like that. So that's what he brought up. And, children think that way.
Right. When I grew up, actually, outside of New York City on Long Island. And my mother was a principal at a Quaker school. And so I went to a Quaker school, and then I went to college in Vermont, a little college called Middlebury. And I met my husband there when we were kids, and we got married after he graduated with, he went on and got another degree in forestry. And so we bought a pickup truck, and we drove to Alaska, because that's where he'd always wanted to go. And I was game, and we didn't really want to grow up to be just like our parents at that point. Didn't value necessarily the same things that you do when you're older. And so we drove to Alaska, and kind of almost by accident, I've been there ever since. And I'm 56 now, and I've been there since I was 22. So now my whole adult life, and it's all pretty much been in the same tiny town, and I've raised 5 children there, and now I have 5 grandchildren, and 4 of them, 4 little girls live in Haines, and this book came about because a journal asked me for some, pithy, wise words, things that I've learned because I'm an obituary writer and because I've written columns. My Women's Day column was called Life Lessons of All Things, and I'm a very reluctant sort of preacher, but she just insisted and finally said, "Heather, just 3 words, come down with 3 words that you would want to leave your grandchildren." Now, when somebody says that, you think, okay, and I couldn't, there's so many things I want to tell them, But instead, I don't know where it came from. I just came up with find the good. And I figured if you can do that, if the kids can do that, then everything else will come in, you know, fall into place. And then I realized that I've learned that basically writing obituaries, because when somebody dies, you try to find the good. You try to find something that they left the world, some kindness, some relationship, something. It's not polite to write ill about the dead, but you don't want to be dishonest either. So it's become a habit for me over the years, and I realize that it's a pretty good one, and it's something that people can do.
We are visiting with Heather Lindy. Heather is the author of the book Find the Good, and it's a book about writing obituaries and obituaries in a small town. Now, Heather, tell us a little bit about, because most people aren't familiar with that familiar, including myself, kind of like the history of the obituaries, you know, from small towns like yours to, you know, some of the obituaries in New York, as I've read at the New York Times, they're huge. But of course, obituaries have been on forever, because even if it's not on paper, people hear the news about somebody passing on and they tell stories. And sometimes that's how those legends are built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we all want to remember people, and we want to look to lives well lived in terms of how they, you know, what they can teach us about how to live our own lives. And I'm not, I don't necessarily know how they do it in other places. I know how we do it. And nowadays, oftentimes, you know, the families write them for the paper and they pay to put them in there. And that's tough because you're limited by the, you know,
the amount of words
per word. And
yes,
you want to say more and you can't. So that's hard. And I think that's, in a way, that's kind of too bad. But that just seems to be how it is. I think in our community, it's different than that, and I'm glad it's different than that. And I was thinking about our town also, in terms of the way we deal with death and dying, is also interesting and a little bit different, and maybe that's an extension of how we write obituaries. But we don't have a funeral parlor, and we don't have even a morgue, and so bodies aren't embalmed or anything. And so when somebody dies, the volunteer ambulance crew comes and gets them if they're at home, which a lot of people are still in our community. We have a volunteer hospice that helps with that. And then they take that body to the fire hall, a cool room at the fire hall, and the family or the friends or some volunteers, sometimes it's a pastor, prepares the body, and another person helps you buy a casket at the hardware store for a reasonable amount of money, and sometimes people make their own. The families will build one. And then they're buried out at the cemetery, and the town helps with that. And everybody contributes. There's usually a party, a potluck afterwards. And it comes, I think, part of our death kind of ritual, like you were talking about the, you know, kids thinking Kansas. In Haines, we have about a quarter of the population are Tlingit Indians, Native Alaskans. And they have lots of rituals around death that help people remember, and in a good way. And there's sort of the initial very sad part, but then 40 days after the funeral, there's a 40-day party, they call it, where there's a lot of dancing and singing and some grieving. And then there's a year party at the end of that time, a year after the person's died, where the sadness is lifted and the joy goes on. But children are part of it. Elders are part of it. The stories are all part of it. And you serve the, you know, the foods that the person liked, and some of that has rubbed off on the non-natives, I think, in a very good way. And again, the whole point of it is to remember the good and to remember the stories.
We're visiting with Heather Lindy. Heather is the author of the book Find the Good, and this is a book about writing obituaries in a small town. And she's been discussing what it's like where she lives in Alaska. And Heather, when you talk about, you know, the Native Alaskans from the particular tribe or group that's there, what about there? What I'm trying to say is there are some groups, especially among Native Americans, that, you know, some of their ceremonies and things like that are private and not open to people who are not part of the group. So how is that treated there? Or, as you mentioned, everybody's invited.
Well, I think in a small town, we're all mixed up. I can't speak for everybody, and I wouldn't do that. But what's happened with the Tlingit people in the area where I live is that they're very generous and open, and they've, quote-unquote, adopted a lot of non-natives into their community. And when that happens, it's actually considered sort of an obligation to what they say, show your face, be there at these events. And it's a matter of disrespect if you're not in some ways. The stories and the rituals or the songs are still very much proprietary, like you say, that belongs to the people the same way, or sort of in a way, like things in a church belong to the congregation and aren't personally owned, that those happen that way. But in terms of the events, if you're invited, then you go. That's the polite thing. And the other thing I've learned is that you never say no thank you to food that's being offered to you. You'll eat a lot, and it's considered rude to say no. You just keep eating until you're going to tip over, and your job is to say thank you, or in Tlingit it's gunachish. I've mangled it, but that's sort of the word, gunachish, and that's probably the best thing that you can say. I'm thinking, too, this is, since we're on this subject a little bit, one of the people that I wrote an obituary for, I love to find things that are surprising, and this obituary involved a native elder who was a very wise man, and his name was Art Jess, and he often spoke at community gatherings and, you know, would sort of give his blessing, for lack of a better word, on things. And he was widely admired through Native, non-Native community and all different walks of life in Haines for just being a really kind, gentle, intelligent, wise man, a good listener and a very good speaker. And when he died, I learned that he couldn't read or write, and that he was born as a child. He had severe dyslexia, and that he learned everything by having people read it to him, and then he would memorize it. And he went on to, he worked for the Department of Transportation. He actually worked for the Caterpillar Heavy Equipment Company and fixed all kinds of engines and repaired stuff, and was very good with his hands, but also was a very good speaker. And I thought, I mean, there's a find the good. I mean, really, something that could have been in other ways called a disability is what created his, in lots of ways, greatest strength. And people had no idea, because it wasn't something he ever shared with people. And if anything, he was a little embarrassed by it. And yet, it's like, wow, what a lesson that is.
Now, you know, as you mentioned that, you said that the people, you know, it's a good way to not find the negative in something or looking at the downside of something. And that's one of the things that your book focuses on, is not just obituaries, but anything in life that might be coming your way, to try and turn a negative into a good. Am I correct?
Yes. There's one of the, all the chapter titles all have a little kind of lessons, you know, the pretty good is better than perfect, stop and smell the fish, draw lines in the sand so you can move them. And that story is about my youngest daughter, who, personally for me, it was a big thing to have my kids all go to college, and especially coming from a small town and graduating from a tiny high school with 90 students. And because I had been to school and my husband had, I wanted our kids to, and I wanted to make sure that they could go out in the world and they wouldn't get so-called, you know, how country mouse, city mouse kids that grew up in rural places might get stuck there. I wanted them to have options. Of course, I wanted them to come back, but I wanted to send them out in the world, and it was really important to me. And I had four of my children had graduated, and then my youngest daughter was a sophomore in college, just about to start her sophomore year. She was barely 20. She and her boyfriend got pregnant. And I was so, you know, my line in the sand had been college, and this was not my plan for her. And my family was so afraid to tell me. I think they thought that the top of my head would blow off. And the other siblings all knew, and my husband knew before they told me. And I was upset. And then my husband, he's so smart and good, and he's just like, Heather, it's not, she doesn't have cancer. It's not terminal. It's a baby. And at the time, another one of my daughters had been married, and I had my first grandchild, and I had never anticipated loving that child as fiercely as I did. I think, you know, you hold that first grandbaby, and you just can't believe it. You know, that psalm that says, you know, may you be blessed with seeing your children's children. I mean, when that happened, I was overwhelmed, and then I kind of realized I have to change this. I don't want to be estranged from my daughter, you know, because they're having a baby. And you know, I moved the line. I changed it. It's like all my kids are like, what? It's okay if Stilly doesn't go to college. I'm like, you bet. She's having a baby now. We're in the we're in the family mode, and what are we going to do to make sure they're okay? And actually, she ended up marrying her boyfriend, who's a wonderful guy, and they live next door in a little kind of cottage that was sort of falling down that we had owned and planned on knocking down and maybe putting a garage over there someday, and we fixed it up enough that they live there, and they actually have two. I have two darling granddaughters there now, Lonnie and Sylvia Rose, and Stoli is still going back to school and taking classes online, and she's scheduled to graduate next year and will be an elementary school teacher. But I don't think that would have happened if I didn't move that line in the sand.
And you never expected, I'm sure, that baby would turn everything around for you in a positive way like it has been.
No, I didn't. And I think sometimes you get so caught up in your own little world and you're just determined to see things that aren't good. And, you know, it's hard. I mean, I was just like, oh, no. I mean, how is she going to do this? And as we all know, you know, raising children or being if she was going to be a single mom, I was beside myself. And she, you know, didn't seem to understand the way a mother would, you know. And now, I couldn't be happier, really. It's good.
And Heather, let me ask you this, because other people might be going through the same situation or something similar. The fact that, you know, as your husband mentioned, she doesn't have cancer. It's not anything serious. It's a baby. Do you think that perhaps sometimes in situations like that, we're worried more about us, our pride, we're shame, perhaps that people say negative things about us, instead of looking at the good, as you mentioned?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was my big thing. I live in a small town. Everybody would say, oh, you know, perfect Heather, and now look, her kids, you know, are having trouble, and it was like my fault. And I think you do. You just feel terrible. And then you just have to say, hold it. It's not about other people. It's not about me. It's about my daughter, and it's about how can I set this example. And I mean, it's hard. I mean, it was really tough for me, and I wrote about that, you know, in the book, because it's not like everything is happy. I mean, actually, part of my big change in life came about from a terrible thing. 10 years ago, I was hit by a car. I was run over by a truck. I know, and I learned then, luckily I'm better, I can walk, I broke my pelvis in lots of places and had other kind of life-threatening injuries, and it took almost 2 years of rehab. But I learned that most people, by the time they reach 50, have been hit by a truck. I mean, whether it's the proverbial truck of, like you said, a child in prison, or you know, a marriage that has gone bad, an abusive situation, you know, a death in the family. There's these things that happen to people, and everybody's got something. And I think the best way to treat the people that we encounter, especially the ones that are kind of angry and grumpy, and they're just, you know, constantly just ticked off, you know, screaming at the clerk at the bus station or whatever because the bus is late, you know, those kind of people, there's something going on there that's really not about what they're angry about. And if you treat them with kindness, I mean, it can't hurt, and it can only help.
You know, it's interesting as you mentioned that, because my daughter, my youngest one, has mentioned that before. They'll say, Dad, we don't know what that person's going through. You know, maybe they're in pain, or maybe they just lost someone. So we never know what's going on and why they're acting like that. It's not that they're holding it against you. It's because of something else, as you mentioned. And I like the fact that you, in the book also, I think, anyway, in the book reviews, you have a quote of you saying that we all write our obituaries on a daily basis almost.
Right. People always ask me that. They say, well, Heather, you know, are you going to write your obituary, or who do you want to write it? And honestly, I mean, I write them, but obituary itself isn't really that important. It's what you're doing to quote-unquote write it by the way you live. And I can tell you that, and it sounds corny, and everybody knows it, and your mother probably taught it to you, but, I mean, in the end, really, when you get right down to it, all that really matters is the relationships that you have and with the people who you meet, whether your family or friends, or just the way you treat your neighbors or people that you meet on the street that have nothing to offer you in terms of gain. How my mother used to say something like, you know, that being good means being nice to people who can do nothing for you. And, you know, there's something to that. And I think that if you can walk through life that way, those are the best obituaries to read. The very best ones to read are about people who have done that in a way. One that I wrote in the book that I talk about is a guy named Clyde who had a fish shop in Haines, and who used to just hang out on the sidewalk. He'd often be nursing a can of beer, smoking a cigarette. He was certainly no saint, but he was always said hi, always talked to people. And when he died, he had organ failure, and he was sent out of town. And he said on the way out, he told his brother-in-law, who was a volunteer fireman, that he didn't think anyone would miss him when he was gone. And then at his funeral, which his family had planned to be just a small little gathering, the whole town was there. I mean, everybody from, you know, the waitress at the cafe to the kids that hang out on Main Street to the banker, you know, and everybody had really liked Clyde. And that one kind of hit home with me hard, like, you know, make sure people you know will understand that you're going to miss them when they're gone and make sure they know it before they go. I still can't believe that Clyde didn't know that. And that's a regret that I have.
Heather Lindy has been our guest, and she is the author of the book, Find the Good. And it's Kirkus Reviews talks about it, honest and simple, yet full of lasting strength. The author's prose demonstrate what makes a life better rather than worse, including something as simple as picking up the heart-shaped stones on the beach with a grandchild, optimistic, slightly humorous reflections on living fully engaged, meaningful life. And the conversation we just shared, Heather, was very inspiring. And I'm sure that the people are going to take time now, as the old proverb says, smell the roses. So I want to thank you very much for being with us here today. And if you wouldn't mind telling us if you have a website where they can go and perhaps take a glimpse of the book, and maybe also where they can find it.
Yeah, well, the book, again, is called Find the Good. It's a beautiful little book, and it has a bright lemon on the cover, so it's easy to spot in your local bookstore. It's also available online through independent stores like Pals or, you know, on the other big online places. It's an audio book that I recorded, so if you have a friend that has, you know, macular degeneration or can't see too well, they can listen to it. And I have a website, heatherlindy.com. And it's kind of local. There's a lot of pictures of Haines and my family. I write a little blog that tends to be just sort of things that happen. There's a link to some of the obituaries I've written in the Chilkat Valley News. And you can kind of visit me that way, and I'm easy to contact. So, and if you ever get up to Haines, Alaska, look me up. I'm easy to find.
Thank you very much, Heather, for being with us. We've been visiting with Heather Lindy. She is the author of the book, Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, DJ Orozco. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.